The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Children's Book of America, edited by William J. Bennett, Brainy Quotes, and Everything You Needed to Know About World History by Ann Zeman and Kate Kelly. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, today is July 13th, and last week our country celebrated 4th of July, our National Day of Independence. Tomorrow, July 14th, France will be celebrating its Day of Independence. With these two big national days celebrating independence, our program today will delve into some patriotic history of both our country and that of France. Our first story describes how we came about our independence and how that struggle was captured in Francis Scott Key's The Star-Spangled Banner. This is a story from Eva March Tappan, entitled The Story of the Star-Spangled Banner. The story behind our national anthem is a story of perseverance in defense of liberty. The battle at Fort McHenry that inspired the song took place during the War of 1812. In 1931, Congress chose the Star-Spangled Banner as our national anthem. The year 1814 found the people of Maryland in trouble. America was again at war with Great Britain, and a British fleet had sailed into the Chesapeake Bay. All along the shores, people fired alarms and lit signal fires to let their neighbors know danger was near. The ships sailed up to the bay toward Baltimore. The bustling port was a rich prize. To take it, however, the British fleet would have to get past Fort McHenry, which guarded Baltimore's harbor. As the warships crept upstream toward the fort, the crews could see a giant flag with 15 white stars and 15 red and white stripes flapping above the ramparts. It was the work of Baltimore flag maker Mary Young Pickersgill and her 13-year-old daughter, Caroline. Their own house had not been large enough for the job of stitching together the enormous banner, so they had done some of the sewing in a nearby brewery where they could spread it across the wide floor. Now it flew as the proud symbol of an upstart country that was about to take on the most powerful nation in the world. On the morning of September 13, the big British guns took aim at the flag and let loose a terrible fire. They shot huge bombshells that often blew up in midair. The attack lasted all day. When dark fell, the fleet used signal rockets, which traced fiery arcs across the night sky. It was a spectacular sight. "If Fort McHenry can stand, the city is safe," Francis Scott Key muttered to himself. He stared anxiously through the smoke to see if the flag was still flying. The young Washington lawyer was watching the battle from a little American vessel floating with the British ships. He had sailed out to the British fleet under a flag of truce before the fighting began. A friend had been seized prisoner by the British, and Key went to ask for his release. The British commander agreed, but he would not let Key return to Baltimore with any information he might have picked up. "Until the battle is over, you and your boat stay here," he ordered. Key had no choice but to wait it out, pacing the deck and hoping the fort could hold out. The firing went on and on. As long as the daylight lasted, he could catch glimpses of the stars and stripes through the clouds of smoke. When night came, he could still see the banner now and then by the blaze of the cannon. Finally, toward daybreak, the firing stopped. Key strained to see if the flag was still flying. Could the fort have held out? He wondered. The faint gray of dawn crept into the sky. He could see that some flag was flying, but was it American or British? Who held Fort McHenry? More and more eagerly he gazed. It grew lighter. A sudden breath of wind caught the banner, and it floated out on the breeze. This was no English flag. It was Mary Pickersgill's. Stars and stripes, still waving through the smoke and mist. Fort McHenry had stood, and the city was safe. Overcome with joy, Key snatched an old letter from his pocket. Still watching the flag, he began scribbling a few lines on its back. The British departed, and the little American boat sailed back to the city. Key gave a copy of the poem he had just written to his brother-in-law, who had helped defend the fort. His brother-in-law sent it to a printer and had it struck off on some handbills. Before the ink was dry, the printer snatched one up and hurried to a tavern where many patriots were assembling. "Listen to this," he cried, and he read the verse to the crowd. "Sing it, sing it," the whole company cried. Someone mounted a chair and sang the poem to an old tune. The song caught on at once. Halls, theaters, and houses soon rang with its strains as the British fleet disappeared over the horizon. The years passed, and Francis Scott Key's words found a place in his fellow citizens' hearts. They became the anthem of a nation that stands always for freedom, just as the Stars and Stripes stood through that perilous fight so long ago. The Star-Spangled Banner. Oh, say, can you see, by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, or the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say, does that star-spangled banner yet wave, o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave. And while that song was inspired during the War of 1812, back three quarters of a century earlier, about half a century earlier, in 1775, 1776, the American Revolution is what finally gave us our independence from England. By 1775, there were serious tensions between the 13 British colonies in North America and the mother country, Great Britain. Among other reasons, the colonists felt they were being taxed too heavily and unfairly because they were not represented in the British Parliament. The British thought it only fair that the colonies should help pay for their defense. Many colonists called for independence from Great Britain. In 1781, the 13 colonies won their revolution against the British, and the United States of America was born. In 1768, so that was about a decade before, the city of Boston was occupied by British soldiers. These troops were nicknamed Redcoats because of the color of their jackets. On March 5, 1770, a number of colonists got in an argument with the Redcoats and began throwing snowballs and chunks of ice at them. The soldiers fired shots into the angry but unarmed crowd. Five Americans were killed. Sam Adams called this event the Boston Massacre. The British soldiers were brought to court. Sam Adams's cousin, John Adams, defended the soldiers. Two were found guilty of manslaughter, and the others were declared innocent. Revolutionaries publicized this story to build support for colonial independence. And what were the results of the Revolutionary War that has brought us here to July 4th, 2017? Well, the results of the Revolutionary War, as per everything you need to know about world history book that I'm reading from, were five. One, the 13 colonies became the independent United States of America and were recognized by Great Britain. Two, Britain gave the United States the land east of the Mississippi River, north to Canada, and south to the border of Florida. Three, all British trade restrictions were lifted. Four, a new government with elected representatives was formed under the Articles of Confederation. And five, the successful revolution encouraged other people, especially the French, to overthrow their own governments. The Liberty Bell, which hangs in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, bears an inscription from the Bible. Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. And today, because it is the 13th of July, and tomorrow is July 14th, we're going to talk just a tad about the influence of the American Revolution on the French Revolution. So the American Revolution, 1775 to 1783, the French Revolution, 1789. Listen for July 14th, which is tomorrow. The French Revolution, in 1789, there were three classes of people in France, the clergy, the nobles, and the common people. They were often referred to as the first estate, church, the second estate, nobles, and the third estate, common people. There were great differences in the way the estates lived. The king had total authority. The king and the nobles lived very well and paid few taxes, while the poor struggled and paid most of the taxes. When taxes were raised, the poor often starved. Fighting wars was expensive, and France went into debt. King Louis XVI called a meeting of representatives from each of the three estates to discuss raising money and new taxes. The third estate, the common people, tried to use this meeting to reform the government. When the king refused to give them any power, they formed the National Assembly. They met at a tennis court and agreed that they would demand a new constitution and stay together until one was written. This is known as the Oath of the Tennis Court. On July 14, 1789, citizens took over the Bastille, a storehouse of ammunition, and the royal prison. This sparked the beginning of the revolution. The National Assembly put forth the Declaration of the Rights of Man. It was written by the Marquis de Lafayette, who had helped the Americans with their revolution. The National Assembly declared France a constitutional monarchy. This meant that France would be ruled by a constitution, and the power of the monarch would be limited. The revolution went on for some years and became more violent. The king and queen were tried for treason and publicly executed at the guillotine. France became a republic, but many things did not improve. The summer of 1793 through the summer of 1794 was called the Reign of Terror, because many of the new leaders had begun to use fear and violence, executing hundreds of people each week. Only after the Reign of Terror and the death of the most ruthless leaders did the revolution end. What were the causes of the revolution? The absolute control of the king and his court was an unfair system of government, a government that was also bankrupt. Two, the rich people of the first and second estates paid few taxes, while the third estate, the common people, paid most of the taxes. Three, the extravagance of the rich and the misery of the poor were extreme. When the king needed even more taxes, the commoners refused. Four, due in part to France's feudal arrangements, food was scarce. Bread, which was the main part of the peasant's diet, was very high priced by the summer of 1789. And the fifth cause of the revolution, the National Assembly was formed to break from the king and form a new government based on a constitution limiting the power of the king. And that infamous day, July 14th, 1789, where the people stormed the Bastille, the storehouse of ammunition in the royal prison, sparking the beginning of the revolution, is known, or has been known since then, as Bastille Day. So July 14th, tomorrow. So you want to have another celebration? Celebrate France's revolution and independence on Bastille Day. And the next little excerpt I'm going to read is from the National Park Service, and it is about the French connection of having them give the Statue of Liberty to the United States. The Statue of Liberty was a gift from the French people commemorating the alliance of France and the United States during the American Revolution. Yet it represented much more to those individuals who proposed the gift. In 1865, Edward D. Laboulaye, a French political thinker, U.S. Constitution expert, and abolitionist, proposed that a monument be built as a gift from France to the United States in order to commemorate the preservation of freedom and democracy in the United States and to honor the work of the late President Abraham Lincoln. Laboulaye, and that's spelled Laboulaye, hoped that by calling attention to the recent achievements of the United States, the French people would be inspired to create their own democracy in the face of a repressive monarchy. In 1865, France was divided between people who were still committed to the monarchy and people who supported the Enlightenment ideals, the belief that people had natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was the hope of many French liberals that democracy would prevail and that freedom and justice for all would be attained. In order to turn his idea into reality, Laboulaye talked to many prominent and influential men in France. Auguste Bartholdi, a French sculptor who had been recently commissioned to make a bust of Laboulaye, greatly supported Laboulaye's idea and was soon selected to be the sculptor of the proposed monument. Liberty, that was in quotes, was a controversial idea in the 19th century. To many people, it suggested violence and revolution. Laboulaye and Bartholdi agreed that their monument should not be seen as leading an uprising, but rather as lighting the way, peacefully and lawfully. A key element was the name they gave to the statue, Liberty Enlightening the World. Bartholdi's public monuments hailed back to classical images of a powerful, honorable national authority over any ideology. His statue of Liberty Enlightening the World would be above conservatism and liberalism, and above radical revolutions and political turmoil. She would be an international symbol of liberty, justice, and democracy. In 1871, the statue was transformed from idea into reality. It was to be funded, built, and presented to the United States. This project could not have happened at a better time for Laboulaye. In 1871, an uprising by members of the working and middle classes in Paris against the government was brutally crushed. Laboulaye did not support such extremism among laboring people. Although he wanted to change the French government to a democratic government, he did not want to do it through violence. Despite his liberal views, Laboulaye was criticized by his colleagues because he spoke out against the violence and supported the governmental repression of the uprising. The creation of the Statue of Liberty, however, was a chance for Laboulaye to restore his reputation as a devoted liberal and democratic advocator, honor the success of liberty in the United States, and hope that the French would be inspired to fight for the same ideals. The Statue of Liberty is a robed female figure representing Libertas, the Roman goddess. She holds a torch above her head, and in her left arm carries a tabula ansata, inscribed in Roman numerals with July 4, 1776, the date of the U.S. Declaration of Independence. A broken chain lies at her feet. The statue became an icon of freedom and of the United States, and was a welcoming sight to immigrants arriving from abroad. And that was from Wikipedia, Statue of Liberty. The Statue of Liberty also needed a stand. And in order to raise some money for that pedestal, Emma Lazarus wrote a very inspirational poem, and it is called The New Colossus. It is a sonnet that American poet Emma Lazarus, 1849 to 1887, wrote in 1883 to raise money for the construction of the pedestal of the Statue of Liberty. In 1903, the poem was engraved on a bronze plaque and mounted inside the pedestal's lower level. And here are the words to Emma Lazarus's sonnet, The New Colossus. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And that is from the National Park Service brochure at the Statue of Liberty, on Liberty Island, New York, New York. Well, from bonfires to weaving floral crowns and ruckus dance parties and spectacular fireworks, there's no wrong way to celebrate summer and our freedom to enjoy our lives. And that's actually a quote from travelandleisure.com. And to help you celebrate, gosh, what a better way than to have a party, maybe out on the beach, and to have some yummy guacamole. This is actually a spiced egg salad avocado bowl. It's made with two avocados, seasoned rice vinegar, three hard-boiled eggs, peeled yolks and whites separated, half lime juiced, salt and pepper to taste, chili flakes to taste, and then microgreens, paprika, and edible rose petals, which are optional. Have avocados lengthwise. Remove pits. Remove the skin from one avocado, keeping the flesh of each side intact as your bowls. Rub with a bit of vinegar to prevent browning. Scoop the flesh of remaining avocado into a bowl and mash in egg yolks to combine. Add lime juice and season with salt and pepper. Chop whites into small pieces and fold into avocado mixture. Fill centers of avocado bowls with egg salad and top with chili flakes, greens, paprika, and rose petal if using. And this serves two, and this is from the June Glamour magazine. There are so many ways to enjoy summer. I hope you are doing many of them and maybe even recording a few in that journal that I was talking to you about a couple of shows ago. Anyway, we are going to finish up our show today with a couple of quotes. Well, no matter how you show your patriotic spirit and celebrate our nation's history, we are all Americans, and throughout our nation's history, there have been many patriotic quotes, and I'm going to end our program with a couple of them. This one is by Cory Booker. Patriotism is love of country, but you can't love your country without loving your countrymen and countrywomen. We don't always have to agree, but we must empower each other. We must find the common ground. We must build bridges across our differences to pursue the common good. This next one is from John F. Kennedy. I look forward to a great future for America, a future in which our country will match its military strength with our moral restraint, its wealth with our wisdom, its power with our purpose. This one is from Barack Obama. We the people recognize that we have responsibilities as well as rights, that our destinies are bound together, that a freedom which only asks what's in it for me, a freedom without a commitment to others, a freedom without love or charity or duty or patriotism, is unworthy of our founding ideals and those who died in their defense. And finally, by Abraham Lincoln. My dream is of a place and a time where America will once again be seen as the last best hope of earth. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I'm Anika Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by KiwanisFoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Have a wonderful rest of the week and summer, and we'll see you next week.